What if government is not by and for the people, but instead is a corporation, a massive corporation with all the subsidiaries of smaller and smaller corporations, actually designed for profit of the corporation, of, by, and for the corporation? You see this in our local community with industrial parks. Industrial parks where tax incentives, fee and lieus, are concentrated to give the corporations maximum tax relief in the promise of jobs that then those jobs will bring in tax income from the people. And every corporation is a subsidiary of the big corporation, because it is the big corporation, the government, that gives permission to form these corporations. And under that, they fall under the corporate rules and regulations. Citizens fall under the same corporatocracy. This is a blending of corporation and state, but in reality, it is the corporation. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kershaw County Liberty Report. I'm your host, Jeff Maddox. And as we cover our local county, Kershaw County, South Carolina, everybody that follows or listens to this can find the same examples in their county, municipality, that the corporation, the large corporation, the big corporation of the federal government, sends down mandates and grants and legalized manipulation of property, of small and large business, any businesses, even the people themselves, through zoning laws, and they manipulate the herd through all of it. In the latest example in Kershaw County, we had a zoning ordinance that was going through that joined, redid an agreement between Lee County and an adjacent county in Kershaw County. A redoing of their agreement for an industrial park. Now, most people would imagine that an industrial park was one contiguous piece of property. But in the world of legal ease, that term has now changed to a mean that it can be a multitude of properties within the two counties, to which any entity that you might care to could have maximum tax relief. And here it has gone to the solar industry. And remember that recently they've given permission for solar farms to be installed in Bishopville, up in Lee County, and also down in Kershaw County, in separate places. What now they have done is move all those little 150 acres, 500 acres, 32 acres, 10 acres, they've moved all these into what they call an industrial park. So they're scattered everywhere. And this is the manipulation of the law that the state put in place, that the federal government had already suggested. And now every corporation that meets the criteria of the empire is able to get maximum tax relief. And let me ask you this. How many jobs do you really believe are permanent jobs that are going to be on a solar farm? Ladies and gentlemen, there can't be that many. Those things take care of themselves. There might be a maintenance guy come by every now and then, and every now and then you got to get somebody to wash them a little bit. But other than that, there are no jobs. That's low maintenance, no jobs. So they're getting the maximum amount of tax relief for the least amount of jobs, which is generally speaking the way it goes. Even your EV plant over in Bishopville, the Scout Motors deal, or the Boeing deal. Now we're seeing what Boeing's collapsing all around. The same thing in Kershaw County. Now they're starting to let anything can be an industrial park as long as you declare it that. Then we had the litter ordinance. The litter ordinance was up again. And as expected, we had a lot of people in there speaking about the litter and how much they desired some enforcement. Now, our councilman Jimmy Jones has been saying for the last two readings, this was the third and final reading, how are you going to enforce it? We've had laws on the books. How are you going to enforce it? Well, now they've decided, well, guess what? We need more enforcement. And Derek Shoemake, the guy that brought it up to begin with, he said this is a first step, but we do need more enforcement. Everybody agrees they need more enforcement. And so it looks like they're going to be hiring some code enforcement so that they can be the litter enforcement. And so it's more government again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the way that the machine works. It grows by administrating and regulating human beings. The only way that any profit is made is out of human labor. And if you can take 10% of all human labor, you can control the world.
If a government claims a right, and then their claim is that they derive these rights from the people.
Right.
Well, how can people give a group rights that they don't themselves have?
To steal from each other.
Right. If we can't tax people, like I can't tax you, where exactly does government derive this right from? And once you come to, you realize that the goal ought to be as voluntary a society as possible. Now, how exactly you achieve that, how far you can push that is debatable, but certainly that should be the goal. That if government is providing a service for you, well then why does it need to be provided by force?
Kershaw County Council has now formally declared a war on litter. And we expect code enforcement to increase 1-2 this year, maybe a couple of next year or something. But with salary and fringe benefits, insurance and those kind of things, you're talking maybe $100,000 a person. So $200,000. Each meal is $250,000. So perhaps one, maybe two meals. And then you figure that all the county council, the different departments are already coming. We know the sheriff is coming for more money. We know that maintenance and all is more expensive, so they'll be coming for more money. And everybody's going to be coming for more money. Your paycheck, my paycheck, that doesn't increase. But everything around you is increasing. Then we have the 521 resolution against the widening of 521 from Camden to Sumter. Ladies and gentlemen, the people have now gone and hired them a lawyer and had that lawyer create a 501c3. Water Conservation Preservation Society or some kind of thing. And it's going to battle the widening of 521. The Mulberry Plantation and Miss Marty Daniels appear to be the ones that are backing this new conservation movement. And it's interesting that the debate, the opening part of the meeting with public comments, the attorney presents himself and introduces the new 501c3. And then in a interesting move, he explains that he is ceding the rest of his time to Mr. Castro.
Thank Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm fine, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, and thank you for your service here and to our country.
Thank you. Thank
you. We appreciate it very much. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Wateree Valley Preservation Group, which is a 501c3 in organization. And one of the hardest things that I will ever do in my life as a lawyer is to shut up and cede the rest of my time to my good friend and neighbor, Renee Castro. Thank you.
Right off the bat, this attorney comes up and introduces a new 501c3, and specifically the Watery Preservation Society of some sort. And what this is a group formed to protect the property along 521, a highway that is now in the realm of being expanded, being widened to maybe four lanes or turning lanes or something like that, that is all coming out of the Council of Governments. And what most people don't realize is that at your local level, you have little to no control about what's going on with your roads at all. These are all coming from state and federal ideas that you have no say in at all. And in particular, this comes from the Council of Governments. Wherever you are in the United States, there, your county, your municipality is part of a Council of Governments. These were formed in the late 50s and early 60s and even up into the 70s to become regional governance centers for all the federal and state tax monies that are coming in to manipulate your areas as best seen fit from the people above you. The swamps above you, the swamp creatures above you are the ones that are going to dictate what's going to happen to your road system, where you're going to have industry, and where you're going to have housing. And this has little to do with any of your small swamps, your council, your county councils. And so when this Castro fella comes up, he has a lot of questions that a lot of people never know anything about. Questions about the Council of Governments, which they're just finding out about just from late last year, around October 2023, is when the idea of the widening of 521 from Sumter to Kershaw to Camden, South Carolina, it was first mentioned in the Council of Governments, and these people all of a sudden took notice. Generally speaking, these ideas and all are pushed by the same people that now are complaining about it. When it happens in some other place, like in Camden when they build ballparks, or when they build swamp parks, or when they do spec buildings on top of hills in order for economic development in industrial parks and all, these people have nothing to say except support anything. But then when it comes to their backyard, that's when they say, wow, why isn't government listening to me? Let's take a little listen to what Mr. Castro has to say.
All right, thank Mr. you, Rene Castro.
Thank you. Good evening, members of County Council. We are here to address some points of concern related to the COG's proposal for the widening of Highway 521. We realize that the public comment portion of this council meeting does not allow for discussion with the council. Therefore, our goal is to make you aware of these points in the hope that you will actively advocate for the citizens of Kershaw County by challenging members of the COG to explain their actions and hopefully reverse course on this project. What we have pieced together so far causes us great concern. At the January 23rd council meeting, it was stated that 521 expansion is not a done deal and that COG was just doing a feasibility study. But a feasibility study means that a decision was made and the study is to determine how to do it. There was never any determination of the need to expand 521. It is our belief that the proposal to expand 521 is motivated more by outside political interest than by demonstrated need or objective analysis. In October 2023, we were told by a member of COG that there was nothing going on related to 521 expansion. However, we have learned from reviewing minutes of core board meetings that a feasibility study was approved in early 2023. The plan for that study had been supposedly posted for public comment, but we have seen no evidence of any public notice. We have been requesting COG board minutes and other documents related to widening 521, but we have been stonewalled and have had to resort to Freedom of Information Act requests to obtain them. Why has the public been excluded from this process? Why aren't the interests of Kershaw County related to the proposed 521 expansion being represented at COG? We have located and reviewed a document entitled U.S. 521 Transportation Improvement Program, Statewide Transportation Improvement Program Transmittal. According to that document, the plans for a 521 widening feasibility study had been posted publicly from April to May 2023. Why haven't the citizens of Kershaw County seen or heard of this public notice? In addition, the document states there were no comments to the public posting.
What's interesting here is he's talking about why it was posted. It was for public comment. Why didn't we hear about it? No. They posted on their little website and all Council of Governments hearings are open to the public. The problem is people don't pay attention to them. People don't know about them. But he's complaining now, well, we didn't know about it. It is your responsibility to know about it in order to go and comment about it. But what the swamp counts on is layer after layer after layer of things to confuse you. And they keep you stressed out. They keep you put in on the hamster wheel where you have to work and work and work and very little time off. And you don't have time to look into what actually the government is doing to you. And so right here, he's complaining about, we didn't know, we didn't know, we didn't know. That's your own fault.
Why hasn't been discussed here at publicly at County Council? How could something as impactful as widening 521, if it really was made public in a conspicuous enough manner, not raise any public comment? Why didn't that surprise anyone on COG? Why didn't any COG member question it? Why didn't any members of County Council question it? The narrative section of that same TIP document states, and I quote, 521 has inadequate shoulders and minimal turn lanes, end quote. These are the only potential concerns raised with 521 in that document. What data and analysis are there to support that these are actual problems rather than just opinions? How does this translate to necessitating widening 521 to four lanes? These points are similar to those raised in 2014, but those 2014 COG documents, those issues were to be addressed by remediation within the right-of-way. No widening to four lanes was actually required. Why is widening being proposed now? The current document also states that widening 521 would somehow improve safety and travel time. What analysis and data is this based on? No analysis or data is provided in that document. Why is COG secretly pushing a project of this size, destructive impact, and cost with no supporting data or analysis? One of you stated at the January 23rd council meeting that the feasibility study will analyze traffic data to determine if there is a problem with 521. But in referring to three proposed feasibility studies in those COG minutes from early 2023, the 521 study is characterized very differently than the other two feasibility studies. 521 study was described in his evaluation of options for 521. Essentially, it was a foregone conclusion that widening or some other major modification will be pursued. It was also stated in those COG board minutes that funds for the project have already been guaranteed by the infrastructure bank. So much for the project not being a foregone conclusion. As mentioned in the COG board minutes from early 2023, state funding for 521 expansion has been guaranteed by the Transportation Infrastructure Bank. But in response to a FOIA request that we put in several weeks ago, the South Carolina Infrastructure Bank stated in writing, I quote, "The bank does not have any documents responsive to the FOIA request. In fact, the bank does not have any information or knowledge related to the widening of US 521 to four lanes or other significant alteration of US 521 between the city of Sumter and the city of Camden," end quote. So what inside information does the COG have that isn't being shared with us? On January 23rd, we presented the council with a petition from over 250 concerned citizens opposed to the widening of 521. The room was packed with county residents who objected to the project. We had half a dozen citizens speak, pointed out the enormous negative impact the project would have on the environment, on our communities, on local historic sites, and on the already uncontrolled growth of Kershaw County. Not one person, not even a member of this council.
Madam Chair.
Just a minute, Mr. Castro. Yes, Mr. Dunst.
Oh, wait a minute here. So Mr. Castro is out of time, and he's keep continuing. And Jimmy Jones brings up a point of order. There's a five-minute limit per speaker at county at public comments. Let's take a listen to what happens next.
Okay, Mr. Detweiler, your time is up. The next speaker is Renee Castro, which you are, Renee Castro. I'm going to allow you to continue. This is a very unique situation. And Mr. DeBose, does that violate?
No.
Any part of our rules? Okay.
Does not.
Okay. All right.
You're the chair of the meeting.
Can you start the timer? All right, Mr. Castro.
Thank you.
So you see what they did right here. She addresses the attorney that ceded his time to Mr. Castro and said, "Your time is up," and now the next speaker is Mr. Castro. And I'm going to allow this because it is a unique situation. What is clear is this is favoritism toward a position and manipulation of the rules, bending of the rules as a dictator. And Jimmy Jones is providing her with a reason. And it was not the attorney that answered. It was Jimmy Jones. This doesn't violate. This doesn't violate. You see, ladies and gentlemen, Chairwoman Katie Gwynn and Councilman Jimmy Jones, who is vice chair, are both pushing this resolution against the widening of 521 on behalf of Mr. Castro, on behalf of Marty Daniels, and behalf of the 501c3 that was just formed by these people. Now, over many years, Jimmy Jones has told everybody that don't worry about resolutions. Resolutions don't matter. Resolutions don't matter at all. But for the last three or four meetings, when this resolution comes up, Jimmy Jones is hard, fast. We got to pass it. We got to pass it. It means everything in the world to us. So this bending of the rules, Now, had anybody else been up there against it, speaking against this resolution, would they have been allowed to continue and cede their time to the next person and the next person, just like Katie Gwin has allowed Mr. Castro to continue? Would this have happened? This is what we're talking about, the swamp. Mr. Castro continues.
Thank you.
And your time starts now.
I appreciate that. So no one argued that 521 actually needed to be widened to four lanes. Since we prepared these remarks for you today, we actually did receive a response to our FOIA request from COG late this afternoon around 3 o'clock, about 24 documents, several hundred pages. We tried to get through as much of them as we could. Two important things were noted so far, although we still want to do more analysis. Nowhere in the documents that we received from COG responsive to our FOIA request was any analysis of need done for the widening of 521. There's no data presented, there's traffic issue, safety issue, nothing related to an analytical, data-driven need we need to widen 521. Multiple documents, though, did measure when they referred to 521 as widening 521. And this is important because when we discussed this on the 23rd, some folks said, let's just see the feasibility study readout. They're going to analyze traffic data. Well, no, it's all about widening 521. That's what the documents that we received today say. It's important to realize that all anyone had to do was call up a friend on the COG and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. COG person, you know, these folks from Watery Valley Preservation are here with their pitchforks and torches all up in our business. Can you just send us your analysis data suggesting 521 needs to be widened? That's all we needed on the 23rd. That's all anybody's had to do to now. We haven't received that. We didn't even get it today as part of the FOIA request. We're assuming that does not exist. So respectfully, some of the comments raised on the 23rd suggesting, hey, let's just let the feasibility study go. It's not a foregone conclusion. They will look at traffic and data and da-da-da-da-da. Based on what we know today, unless the COG is withholding documents, respectfully, and I realize you were giving your colleagues on the COG, you know, the benefit of the doubt, those comments don't hold anymore. I don't see how you can objectively continue to support this process that the COG is running. So here's where we are. We have a project that would cause huge destruction in Kershaw County, environmental impact, private property, farms, historic sites, all sorts of destruction, enormous costs, hundreds of millions of dollars. No need has been substantiated by Kershaw, by Sumter, by the COG, by anybody, as far as we can tell, based on a FOIA request. And there's no benefit to Kershaw County or to Sumter County. Even Sumter hasn't explained why there's actually a need for this or a benefit. So what we ask you to do, based on all of this, is to please adopt the resolution that we have proposed and that we is on the agenda for discussion later today, later tonight. But more importantly, we ask you to please help us in engaging with the COG to understand what is going on. We're not trying to be difficult here. Just explain to us why this project is needed based on everything that we know. And if not, we need your help in getting COG to reverse its course on this project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Castro.
Mr. Castro brings up a lot of good points. Points that I've been making for many years about the Council of Governments and how it's a super Walmart of government grants. What they don't really understand is they don't have any control of what's going to happen. These people think that government loves you, and government loves you unconditionally and is always going to do what's best for the majority of the people. I think Pork Chop has something to say about that. Don't you, Pork?
Oh, the government loves you, don't you know? Oh, the government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, the government loves you, and the government loves you, don't you know? And Jeffy said, oh, great little Pochot, shut up, the government don't love you. And I said, bah, the government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, the government loves you, the government loves you, don't you know? And Jeffy said, ah! Folks out the government don't love you. That's why they won't let you build here, and they will let you build over yonder, and you gotta ask permission for everything, and you gotta pay and pay and pay, and you don't get good services and all, and they lie to you all the time and everything, and folks out say, nah, the government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, don't you know? Oh, the government loves you. The government loves you. The government loves you, don't you know? And Jimmy run out and he slammed the door and he said, shut up, Pork Chop. The government don't love you. And Pork Chop said, you know what he said? The government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, the government loves you, the government loves you, don't you know? Y'all know the government loves you. That's why they tell you what to do. That's why they take all of that from you. Because the government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, don't you know? The government loves you, the government loves you. Don't you know that the government loves you? Don't you know? Bye, y'all.
Yep, government loves you, don't you know? Yep, government loves you, don't you know? So, after Mr. Castro gets done, the lady herself, the Duchess of Mulberry Plantation, Miss Marty Daniels, comes up. She's upset that her plantation might be encroached by a little bit. The great plantation, Mulberry. Listen to this.
The next speaker is Marty Daniels. Hi, Marty.
Can you hear me? Is that all right?
Yes, ma'am.
We have good news to share, and we need your help. We've created a new organization, Watery Valley Preservation, WVP. It will be a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Our mission, and we need your help, is to preserve this rural 30,000-acre part of southern Kershaw County. West of the river, east to Lee County, south to the Sumter County line. There are forests, farms, wetlands, and river bottom swamps with giant ancient trees like the Congaree Swamp. The Watery Valley has miles of undisturbed habitat and wildlife corridors, nesting eagles, small cats, and big cats, no kidding, even bear sightings. There are tens of thousands of shorebirds and waterfowl nesting right next to 521, egrets, herons, great flights of ibis, mute swans, and wood storks. Some farms produce food and plants for our farmers' market, a huge contribution to the local food supply. We're in the Kawasi Basin, the green heart of South Carolina. We're in the Coastal Conservation League's area, all the way to the fall line of Camden. We have conservation easements with the Congaree Land Trust, Ducks Unlimited, and advocacy from the Nature Conservancy. Everyone needs to see just how valuable this big green area is. We need your help. Historic towns like Camden that are acred by big rural areas are well positioned for the future. Heritage tourism, hospitality, commerce, agriculture, food production, country bicycling, river recreation. Camden is surrounded by others, on the other three sides by commercial and housing developments. Kershaw County lost 2,000 acres of farmland last year. We need your help. Watery Valley Preservation will promote conservation, education, conservation easements, and collaboration with state and national groups. We need to send a message to the COG. Go back. Do a real, honest transportation study. We need your help. We know you know that something is way off on the COG's rush to expand 521. We hope you are as alarmed as we are about the secrecy, the no-see-em public comment period, and the obsessive focus on four lane. We all know that four lane really means eight lanes by the time it is built out, and then come the dollar stores, fast food, and strip malls. To get to the truth, we've engaged a nationally known transportation expert for an independent study. We already know two lanes are sufficient. Watery Valley Preservation is going to enlist a lot of allies. We need your help. We're talking with people statewide and nationally. The Coastal Conservation League, South Carolina Environmental Law Project, Congaree Land Trust, Kwassi Basin, Ducks Unlimited, Conservation Voters, South Carolina State Historic Preservation, archaeologists, local churches, sportsmen and women. Their eyes are going to be on what we do here and what you do. What is at stake is whether we roll over to an invasive freeway that opens uncontrolled population growth, or we work together. We push ahead on conservation easements, and you make responsible growth a priority with new rules on housing developments, setbacks, agricultural overlays, service boundaries. Our district needs a change, too. Our district. We need a representative. We need someone who represents us all, who will come and talk with us, who will listen, who will answer the phone, who will return our calls. We need you to be as alarmed as we are about the COG's rush to four lane. A vote for the resolution tonight is a vote that says, whoa, we oppose jumping right to four lane without due process. It's a vote that says secrecy is not okay. It's a vote that says, from all we've heard, COG, you requested a four-lane plan. First, we should see a traffic study to see if there's a problem. And then SCDOT should come up with the recommendations, not the COG. It's your response to us citizens in good faith that you'll push for transparency and truth. County Council, we need your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels.
And the crowd applauded. But they're in the wrong place. The Council of Governments and the County Council do not relate to each other, except that the County Council puts a couple of people onto the Council of Governments. But most of what comes through the Council of Governments is federal and state. The state infrastructure committee, which decides what highways are going to be fixed, what highways are going to be expanded, what bridges are going to be fixed, who's going to get what. The federal dollars are also traced in there, and they have to be qualified and chosen, and that goes way above the simple people of whatever county you're in. The Council of Governments is the Super Walmart where all this meets together. And things are not really hidden because nobody knows anything about the Council of Governments. And then when it hits you in the face, that's when you start to say, oh, this ain't right. This is wrong. What is the government doing? I thought they loved me. Well, they do love you, don't you know? Well, this resolution has been bounced around for several meetings now. And the last time it came up, it was deferred by Russell Brazel and the rest of the council so that maybe we could find some sort of language that would meet the criteria so that everybody could support it, even though a resolution means nothing. But they reworked the wordings, they reworked everything, and Chairwoman Katie Gwynn explains what the new
resolution, a resolution opposing any plan or project to widen U.S. 521. Chairwoman Katie Gwynn read a resolution of Kershaw County Council opposing any plan or project to widen U.S. Highway 521 in Kershaw County. See attached resolution. After the reading of the resolution, Vice Chairman Jimmy Jones made a motion to approve the resolution, seconded by Chairwoman Katie Gwynn.
Do you want me to withdraw?
I'm asking you to, yes.
For what reason?
That specific resolution was deferred to this meeting, and I'm not going to, we don't need to take a vote on it.
Yeah, just need clarification. Yes.
Okay. Okay. You withdraw your motion from January 23rd.
Yes. Okay. I still don't remember it.
Okay.
Of course, you were walking me around with the pictures, making me, people think I was Biden the way you walked me to the wall.
So at first, there was a little confusion going on. The old resolution was now going to be pulled off the table and a new resolution stuck in its place. Again, kind of bending the rules, moving it around, playing loose with the rules, should we say. And so Jimmy Jones takes the resolution off the table, and Ms. Gwynn offers the new worded resolution.
And gentlemen, in your agenda packets, there is another resolution. So at this time, I'm going to read that resolution. Mr. Jones, I just wanted to make sure we handled the prior resolution before we introduced this one.
No, you're absolutely correct. I just wish I knew about it before I walked in here. Thank you.
I actually thought that I made the motion, so I was just going to withdraw it myself. Ms. Parler gave me the minutes, and then I saw that that was the way it was. All right, a resolution of Kershaw County Council opposing a plan to widen U.S. Highway 521 to four traffic lanes in Kershaw County south of Interstate Highway 20. Whereas U.S. Highway 521 south of Interstate Highway 20 in Kershaw County is presently adequate, and whereas U.S. Highway 521 south of Interstate 20 in Kershaw County does not need to be widened to four traffic lanes, and whereas the widening of U.S. Highway 521 south of Interstate 20 in Kershaw County is not an infrastructure priority of Kershaw County, as there are other areas in Kershaw County with insufficient road infrastructure, and whereas the widening of U.S. Highway 521 south of Interstate 20 in Kershaw County is opposed by the constituents living in the area directly impacted by the proposed project, and Kershaw County Council is supportive of those constituents. Now, therefore, be it resolved by Kershaw County Council that Kershaw County Council opposes a project to widen U.S. 521 in Kershaw County south of Interstate 20 to four lanes and requests that this project not be pursued. Is there a motion regarding this resolution tonight?
I so move.
Okay. Mr. Jones with the motion. Is there a second? Okay. I'll second it. And into discussion, Mr. Jones?
So with that, they started a discussion, and the discussion went back and forth for 45 minutes. Again, on a resolution that carries no weight in law at all. It's just saying something. They resolute all the time for no reason. They proclamate and resolute like a hierarchy, like in a church hierarchy. They resolute and proclamate. It has no legal binding at all. But they went on for 45 minutes. And in the end, all they did was they couldn't get the votes. Mr. Jones, Ms. Gwynn, and Mr. Brazel were the only ones that could support this because of the conflict between the Council of Governments, the idea that they may suffer repercussions from the Council of Governments and not get their fair share of the money, and ill feelings between the swamps. Sammy Tucker, Derek Shoemake, and Brant Tomlinson didn't want anything to do with it. And Danny Cato enters into this long spiel about he doesn't have enough information. I don't have enough information at all. And until I get enough information, I don't know what I'm going to do. What's interesting here is there is a feasibility study that is going to be done by the Council of Governments to see what they're going to propose to do with 521. In order to be informed, you have to understand where they're headed. But Also, you have to understand that this deal is already done. Once these things enter the swamp at the state and federal level, once you see it at the Council of Governments, it's basically a done deal. All the whining and complaining doesn't even matter because it's already in the pipeline, which takes years and years to go through. And now the feasibility study is going to take a year to a year and a half. And they're talking about deferring until Danny Cato has enough information to make a informed decision on whether he's going to vote on a resolution that doesn't mean anything, that says that the people around there don't want it wide.
But if it's deferred, I want to make sure that we have this study back to make sure that we know what their plans are, whether it's widening it 3 feet or whether it's putting in four lanes or whether it's just putting in a couple turns. I want to know what they're... I don't want to vote on something that I don't know what I'm voting on. I think it would be very immature of me if I voted on something that I really don't know what they're going to do. I mean, this is all speculation. You know, when you said that there was an independent study that you're waiting to get back and a traffic study.
Ms. Daniels, can you please come to the microphone?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be out of order. I said we feel forced to hire an independent engineer from Vermont to come down here because we can't get information. We're asking that person to assess what's going on here.
Okay. See,
we as taxpayers are taking this on ourselves, which is not right. And it clearly says that four lanes is what they want. And the study isn't going to prove yes or no on four lanes.
Basically, that Marty Daniels, the Mulberry Plantation, doesn't want government messing with them. They want government messing with everybody else. And she has no problem telling everybody else how to live. But when it comes to the government telling her how to live, she doesn't want anything to do with it. This is the hypocrisy of the elite thinking that they are smarter than everyone else and think that they can control the beast itself.
Okay. All those in favor of deferring this resolution indefinitely, indicate by raising your hand. Okay, Mr. Jones, Mr. Cato, myself, and Mr. Brazel, and all those opposed, Mr. Tomlinson, Mr. Tucker, and Mr. Shoemake. Okay, this resolution is deferred.
Thank you, Mr. Cato, very much.
So there is a process. There is a process that is gone through. It takes several years for a road construction project. And those decisions are made at the state level. And the local levels have very little say in any of it. You might can get a traffic light or a turn lane on an old road or something, but major improvements, you don't have anything to say about that. That's the big swamp, the corporate entities that run the plantation. That's where the dirty deals are done and who's going to get contracts and favoritism and all that. Those are all done by the swamp creatures. And these people are barking up the wrong tree. They love government so much, except when government steps on their feet. And now they're going to go through this whole process of trying to fight all this and fight and fight and fight. When in the end, they're going to lose the battle. Because the swamp, the plantation, is going to grow, despite what you little peons whine and cry about. And that was about it. But in another story, Fitch News has been covering a story of a child murdered 32 years ago. We'll let Porkchop introduce this one.
You know that daggum Andy Francis of the Fitch News? He did this report on the judicial system, the 88s. And you know who the 88s is, don't you? That's them fellas that wear the badge. They call themselves the Thin Blue Line. Oh, that's a damn oxymorons or something. Because they stick, most of them stick thick blue lines. Anyway, he did this here story that told about an 88. You know the reason you call them 88s? Because nobody over an IQ 88 is allowed to carry a badge. Everybody knows that. Because the government loves you. Don't you know? But anyway, this fella, this sergeant of an 88, he decided that he was going to bring charges against these people that didn't kill the kid 25, 26, 32 years ago. And now he brings it up and the judge said, "Boo, man, are you crazy?" And it turns out there was a serial killer loose in South Carolina right at the time. And he was from Greenville. And he was on a damn Navy ship or something. Anyway, Andy Fancy did a great job on his little thing, and he edited it really good. And y'all watch this.
And you didn't know anything about the serial killer at the time you were investigating?
No.
Pretty explosive evidence. That's how Deputy Solicitor Ann Williams reacted to evidence presented by defense attorney Sean Kent during his motion to dismiss the state's case against 63-year-old Megan Turner and 69-year-old Victor Turner. On January 9th, 2024, the Turners were charged in connection with the cold case murder of their only child, whose half-naked body was located by Victor 2 days after calling investigators in 1989. Victor's wife was thereafter charged in the rape and murder of her 5-year-old stepson, only for the Ninth Circuit Solicitor's Office to dismiss the case within months due to insufficient evidence.
So the investigation at that time determined that Pamela Turner had deviated from her normal routine that morning.
Come 35 years after Justin Turner was found asphyxiated on his parents' property, Berkeley County Sheriff's Office Detective John Plitch arrested the couple following a, quote, new look at old evidence. What old evidence? Polyester fiber retrieved from a dog leash 3 decades later, leading investigators to believe that Megan and Victor had inverted a dog collar and thereafter used it to murder their son. A theory not only confusing the defense, but Circuit Court Judge Roger Young.
But the collar itself, they don't have.
They just bought a collar from Walmart.
A collar 35 years later.
31 years later.
The dog collar theory was furthermore contested during cross-examination when Kent played a recorded call between Plitch and a forensic expert hired by the sheriff's office to explore his theory.
How wedded are you to this leash? Because I don't think it's that leash. One of the problems with this is you get to a certain point where you're almost making, you know, castles out of clouds and stuff.
Kent furthermore revealed in court an email between the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division and Solicitor Williams in which a forensic analyst wrote this about Plitch.
My recollection is that after explaining that Pamela Turner was excluded as a contributor to a profile, Detective Plish said something to the effect of, "How can we still make this fit?"
According to Plish, Justin Turner died by strangulation either during or after a sexual assault and noted the absence of semen or secretion on or near the 5-year-old's body. Plitch furthermore maintained that Justin was either placed or staged at the crime scene following his disappearance and that investigators noted an unknown car within the area following his murder.
I've been on this case since, I don't know, like an hour and a half ago, and I found it. Y'all had it for 35 years, and you don't know anything about it.
According to Kent, citing research from the University of Virginia's Innocence Project, a serial killer had landed at the Charleston Naval Shipyard on March 3rd, 1989, the very day that Justin went missing. And despite dying without a criminal record, the Columbia native and Irmo High School graduate has since been linked to multiple abductions, rapes, and murders of multiple children across the Eastern Seaboard.
The serial killer had erectile dysfunction until 2000 when he got a prescription for Viagra. His crimes before that time do not involve semen or seminal fluid. In 1987, the serial killer had a toolbox that contained his kit: duct tape, handcuffs, vibrator. A Navy buddy of his saw the box with the serial killer's name on it. On the ship the serial killer was assigned to before and until May of 1989.
After an abducted child escaped his Richland County apartment in June,
redacted,
Richard Mark Avonitz called his sister and confessed to, quote, committing more crimes than he could remember.
What I do appreciate, believe it or not, is I think the officer was brutally honest on the stand. And so sometimes I appreciate that if you're going to get on the stand, just tell the truth, which he did. And he acknowledged the problems with their cases. He didn't try to say there were, and y'all heard it, he didn't try to say there was new evidence. He was very clear. There's the same old evidence looked at in a different way. So, yeah, I harbor some resentment, but not as much as I could.
After recording this story, attorney Sean Kent revealed that Berkeley County Sheriff's Office investigators not only knew about Richard Avonitz, but that the FBI had instructed them to, quote, review all unsolved abductions, sexual assaults, and or murders that occurred the time frame Avonitz is documented to have been in your jurisdiction. This message from the FBI sent 16 years before Thursday's motion to dismiss the state's case against Megan and Victor Turner. For FitzNews.com, I'm Andrew Fancher.
Ain't that something? Andy Fancher did a very good job, and today he's going to join us to talk about this crazy case of a serial killer and an 88 coming after the people that suffered the loss in the first place. Ain't that something? Thank you, Andy Fancher, for that wonderful report and discussion about this terrible thing and how the injustices of the criminal justice system that's run by criminals, on behalf of criminals, how it do. Andy, can you tell me one thing? Does the government love you? Don't you know?
Oh, damn. Motorcycles is coming in.
Hank. Son, what do you see?
Ladies and gentlemen, Fitz News has been doing a yeoman's job. And when I saw the story about the serial killer and how the police, Berkeley County Police, were bringing charges on out of the nowhere,
yeah,
I had to call Andy Fancher and say, Andy, you have got to come in and talk to me about this.
Well, I'm happy that you're interested, that people are talking about what Berkeley County Sheriff's Office, PCSO, did or didn't do in what is a very old and, quite honestly, gruesome cold case that has gone unsolved, up until January of this year, for 35 years.
Yeah. My mind was blown that they come up all of a sudden in 35 years, not making another charge at all, and then suddenly a miracle evidence shows up.
Miracle evidence being, what was it? One red piece of fiber on a dog leash.
And like I was saying, I said, well, how in the world did all of a sudden somebody come up with the idea that let's get out a microscope. I got a microscope for Christmas, and I was using it, and I found one red fiber on a dog leash from 35 years ago.
Right.
And now I suspect that... What? The killer?
They must have used a collar attached to the dog leash. Because one piece of red polyester fiber, because nothing in 1989 was red polyester, mind you, except for the little boy's shirt.
Right. it just befuddles me how in the world that they came up with this idea to even check the fiber in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So do we need to talk about the narrative a little bit? What went down?
That might be, yeah. The people we'll show the clip, of course.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'll show the clip.
Yeah.
But so the narrative here, though, the nuts and bolts is that in 1989, a woman, the stepmother, took her kid to the bus stop, and then he vanished. Disappeared. 2 days later, his father, who had an alibi at the time he went missing, mind you, an airtight alibi, finds his son stowed away in the cabinet of a trailer on his property in Monk's Corner. And it's worth noting that he was accompanied by investigators. It was a sweep of the property because they reported the kid
missing.
Yes. After the school bus came back and little boy didn't get off, that's when they start calling investigators, rallying up the team to try and find their 5-year-old boy.
Right.
And I hate to get so gruesome on the Kershaw County Liberty Report, but when they found him, as noted by the investigators, anal trauma, died by strangulation. And he was sexually assaulted,
right?
Either as he was dying or after he was dying.
Right.
So what do investigators do within months? They start looking at the mother. Rightfully so, okay? Everybody's a suspect.
Everybody's a suspect, yeah.
And they arrest the mother because she did not have an alibi. The only issue with that is that they arrested her on such little evidence that they had to dispose of the case. She was incarcerated. And thank God it was expunged by 1990. But the fact of the matter is, police did not really know what happened with this boy. 35 years later, it appears they've been hyper-focusing on this one family the whole time. They arrest the mother, who didn't have an alibi, and the father, who had an alibi. Remember, the whole reason they couldn't arrest him in 1989 was because he had an alibi. Suddenly, he's culpable. He's a culprit. So they arrest him, and then came the bombshell at court this week. Or the week we're recording the Kershaw County Liberty Report here.
Yeah.
Like, where do you even want to start?
It amazes me that this was a senior investigator mm-hmm. bringing this case.
A new look at old evidence. His exact words. It is, quote, a new look at old evidence. There is no new evidence in the case. They haven't explored any other suspects because obviously it was the mom. We just had to figure out a way to fit and make sure it's the mom and talk about fitting. So the strangulation marks on the boy's neck, right?
Right.
Well, after they find this leash, blow it off, and they find one little shred of polyester fiber, these detectives start wondering about the dog that the family owned at that time, which was a puppy. All right, it was a puppy terrier.
Right.
Named Freeway. So let's start
about
talking.
About the size of my little Floyd.
Yeah, which that would be very difficult to. So anyway, investigators are convinced that mother took the collar off the dog, strangled her son with it, raped her son, and then left him in the cabinet out there. So they go looking across South Carolina for the remnants of this dog, okay? They're digging up holes trying to find Freeway.
To exhume the dog.
To exhume the dog. Fingers crossed he's even wearing the same collar that he was wearing when the family owned him at that time.
How'd they figure out where the dog might have been?
I think they talked to some other families because it's irrelevant. It's a minute point here. Once we get to the elephant in the frickin' room. Talk about an elephant in the frickin' room with headlines, with FBI reports, and these investigators missed it for 35 years. So, okay, before we get into that, the investigators confessed. They went to Walmart in around 2021-2022, bought a dog collar, compared the dog collar to the photograph of the boy's neck, and said, I think we got a match. But only if We inverted the dog collar and twisted it in such a way, and if we, I mean, if we force it hard enough, it can fit.
What?
It's got to be the dog collar.
What are these people thinking about? It sounds like the Keystone Cops.
It is the Keystone Cops.
The hell? You know, I always say it's 88. The IQs of 88, anything above that are not allowed in law enforcement.
Well, see, I'm a journalist. I cannot confirm or negate that.
Well, I can't quite confirm it, but I've witnessed it. So, you know, and this just lends
this
to my
study.
Argument.
Yeah.
This just lends to my argument, 88.
So, well, okay, do we want to talk about the $8,000 forensic expert that the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office paid to explore the dog collar theory?
This is unbelievable.
The man, on a recorded phone call, which the defense attorney played in court, on a recorded phone call between an $8,000 expert paid by taxpayers and the detective, he says, how wedded are you to this leash theory?
How wedded are you to this leash? Because I don't think it's that leash. One of the problems with this is you get to a certain point where you're almost making, you know, castles out of clouds and stuff.
Because I don't think it's the leash.
Yeah.
You're building sandcastles out of clouds here.
Oh, my God. That was classic. Sandcastles out of clouds. I like that.
How wedded are you to this leash? Because I don't think it's that leash. One of the problems with this is you get to a certain point where you're almost making, you know, castles out of clouds and stuff.
But it didn't stop there. SLED, a DNA analyst at SLED, emails the solicitor because they're so concerned by the conversation they just had with the detective, in which the detective says, quote, how can we still make this fit?
Don't make me spit my beer. Oh, my God.
Kent furthermore revealed in court an email between the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division and Solicitor Williams, in which a forensic analyst wrote this about Plitch.
My recollection is that after explaining that Pamela Turner was excluded as a contributor to a profile, Detective Plitch said something to the effect of, how can we still make this fit?
It's like a... And the senior investigator that's up there testifying is doing all this with a straight face.
Yeah. The binders of work, his life's work. Perhaps this was his capstone investigation, like you and I were talking about, the one cold case that you never solved.
Never could. It bothered me to the never end.
So with this evidence, with this theory that was dispelled by an $8,000 analyst, with a SLED analyst talking about how this guy wants to make it fit, with all that, he was able to arrest the mom and the dad, charged them with the murder and subsequent rape of their 5-year-old boy.
I question the judge that signed the warrant for this. Who was that judge?
Start looking into that.
Who was that judge? And what in the hell was he thinking about? Because if that evidence were presented to a dumbass with a laptop, and I had, as you and I were talking, I'm like, oh, my God.
Right.
And the harassment and all that this has led to through those parents that have been through all this. Mm-hmm. And this son of a bitch is up there poking at him like this just to save his stupid career.
Well, understand that every sheriff's platform in Berkeley County for the past 35 years has been solving this case. And in seemingly every speech every sheriff gives, they point fingers right back at the parents. And what have they been pointing their fingers at with the parents these past 35 years? Well, can you believe that after she got out and after we expunged her record because we charged her with the rape and murder of her son, That family had the audacity to move out of Berkeley County.
Well, why would they move?
Because they're guilty.
Guilty!
And then, what was the other one? What was the other situation?
Just think about this. if you were charged and you knew you were innocent and they let you go, they put you through all this crap, mm-hmm. then they let you go. And then every time you go to the local store and everybody be turning around and whispering and all your yeah. friends have done moved out and everything because you've been accused by 88 with no damn evidence. You don't have much choice.
No.
Are you going to live your whole life right there with mm-hmm. your life has been ruined here in Berkeley County.
And then to continue it on with every sheriff, elected sheriff beyond that point, attacking them for moving out of the county, and then something that has been brought up every single time, they never called us to see the status update on their dead son's investigation. Well, hell, if you're a defendant, what defendant would call a sheriff's office?
Yeah, only a dumbass would talk to the damn popo, especially after that. Number five.
Mm-hmm.
I don't answer any questions, any of you lying people, because they are allowed to lie to you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
It rules for thee, but not for you. Because you lie to them and they catch you, your ass is going to jail.
Yeah.
They lie to you, they just smile.
Right.
Hey, we can lie to you.
Because
mm-hmm. we're popo. We're 88, y'all.
Yeah.
Thick blue line.
Yeah, we've got evidence we don't have, so we need you to confess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then what gets me is the feds send out a thing after Richland County gets a hold of the guy.
So let's, before we even proceed further with the bombshell, right, it's worth noting there are holes missing in the next theory that you and I are going to disseminate here.
Yep.
We are actively waiting for information for FOIAs, or at least the defense attorney is. It's worth noting that it's not definitive. However, according to the defense attorney, it makes a whole lot more damn sense than this dog collar theory. So the new theory that's been presented is that, stop the presses, there was a serial killer in Berkeley County, not even within the same time frame, the day that boy went missing. His naval ship had docked at the Charleston shipyard. And while it's not exactly clear the mode of transportation he could have taken if he did do it, the boy went missing 27 miles from the naval shipyard where this man docked the day the boy was announced missing. And, okay, in that moment, I understand how the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office perhaps didn't know about that. I mean, yeah, that is a huge thing. I mean, there are cold cases all across America. We're talking about the truck driving serial killer, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're in town for a night and you're out.
Yeah.
They'll never find you.
Yeah.
But what makes this inexcusable is the fact that the FBI had reached out to the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office after this serial killer was caught for a totally separate rape and abduction where the girl fortunately got out, where she escaped his apartment in Columbia, South Carolina, where he grew up,
mm-hmm.
and messaged the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office saying, we implore you to look at every cold case on earth that you possibly have where this fellow was in your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Attorney Sean Kent revealed that Berkeley County Sheriff's Office investigators not only knew about Richard Ivanitz, but that the FBI had instructed them to, quote, review all unsolved abductions, sexual assaults, and or murders that occurred the time frame Ivanitz is documented to have been in your jurisdiction. This message from the FBI sent 16 years before Thursday's motion to dismiss the state's case against Megan and Victor Turner.
Yeah.
Well, the military themselves said, yeah, his boat was docked right there, 27 miles from where the boy went missing.
Yeah. Is that complete incompetence? What happened at that time? This has been so many years ago now. How many people even recall that were in that police department at the time and all? So now it's so cold that there's
people,
no fingers to point at.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because how many folks have turned victim to Father Time since this boy went missing in 1989? Well, the defense attorney started asking the detective on trial. Is Inspector so-and-so with you? Is Detective so-and-so with you? Over 30 people have died simply to time.
Yeah.
Approximately 30 people have died to Father Time since this original investigation. So now we are reliant on case notes from late detectives.
Yeah.
On top of, well, now we've got this newfound evidence from the Innocence Project. And one thing that I asked the attorney, because the whole reason we know about this serial killer, who it's not, I mean, he is a serial killer. That's what he is. The feds have linked him to multiple deaths, multiple rapes and deaths of children across both sexes. All right, so we're this isn't a conspiracy.
Been in and out courtrooms.
Well, he died without a criminal record. He died while the FBI was pursuing him after that girl got out, after she escaped that apartment in Columbia, South Carolina, because Richland County Sheriff's Office and all their promise, they were actually looking at three different cases of girls who had wound up raped. I believe there was even a murder in that case, and all of them died with this fiber, specific fiber, around their wrists. Fuzzy handcuffs.
Right.
Well, the girl that escaped had the exact same fiber to the girls that the sheriff's office was already looking into in Richland County. So they decide to stroll on over to this guy's apartment, and they find newspaper clippings of, like, obituaries for children. And they're like, okay, maybe we should find this guy. Well, the feds catch up to him in Fort Lauderdale, I think, somewhere in Florida. And as he is surrounded, he calls his sister, confesses, blows his head off.
Huh.
So technically he dies an innocent man.
Right.
But
confession over the phone.
I've committed more crimes than I can count.
Right. That I can remember.
That I can remember.
Like
that. That was his confession.
And you know, we hear stories about this kind of thing all the time, and how the government is there to protect us and all from this, and that, and they're all the time promoting that they do all this. But then you look at cases like this, and you go, "What the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
Why does one not listen to the other? And and who's picking up the ball, drop balls, and?" It's like a clown show of juggling.
Right,
nobody
right.
knows what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this guy that wants to make it fit.
Yeah.
And then the judge signs off on it. Holy shit. You know, Will, he's on this rampage about judicial reform and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, he's right.
Yeah.
But like I say, it's a criminal justice system. It's named that way for a reason.
Yep.
It's run by criminals on behalf of criminals. And we keep seeing over and over and over again, the more criminal you are, the less bail you get, the less parole you get, and the better damn lawyer you get.
Mm-hmm.
You get a Brad Hutto or a Rutherford or somebody like
that
taking deal or whatever kind, for whatever reason. What the hell have they got in there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, why defend one of these pieces of crap?
Right.
What's in it? But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it is like that. But, Andy, that was a hell of a report. I can't believe it. What did mainstream media do?
They were there. Now, you know me as a former MSN myself. I at this point, part of my job has become looking for any redeeming factor to MSM. Because I truly search out looking for for ways to give them credit.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were cameras in that courtroom along with me. And those cameras were pointed at the defense attorney, Sean Kent, during what is, it was a show. I mean, the performance he put on, the ass whooping he handed
to that detective
on the stand.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's sharp.
Well, I'm not going to be as hard at him on camera as I was off camera. They made little to no mention about this serial killer that was uncovered by the Innocence Project and subsequently Sean Kent. They primarily focused on, well, let's see, what did their reports primarily look like? Great goodness, there's a pretrial hearing to dismiss the case, and the detective talked about a dog collar. Thank you, detective. And then Sean Kent mentioned potentially another guy. Back to you guys at the desk.
Yeah. Yeah, no context and all.
Yeah.
Where that comes from and all, and why none of them would do the
well.
The
one
proper
thing that I will say, if I could play the devil's advocate at all, it's that it was more difficult to write to the phone calls that was recorded between the expert and the detective than to just skip it all together.
Right. Right.
But that was so pertinent to look at in the event these folks accused did not do it, the failure of this detective.
Yeah.
You had 35 years and you missed the frickin' message from the FBI saying, look into any cold cases because we think we might have found somebody that fits the bill.
Yeah.
No, we need the dog collar to fit.
Yeah. Yeah. The expert at over $8,000 telling him that, you know, you're building castles out of clouds.
Mm-hmm.
That should have been the $8,000 of brilliance.
Right.
Right there.
The best $8,000 spent.
Yeah. Duh. and for the judge to, that had to be in there. That had to be in the warrant, the asking for the warrant or something, saying, you know, he's building sandcastles out of clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ain't signing this warrant. I want to know who the damn judge is.
And after having this conversation, I do too. Like, I think I might have to reach out to the attorney.
Yeah, he's probably damn dead too.
He died from the time he signed the warrant.
He was in the truck with the Boeing guy.
Yeah, oh hell.
Self-inflicted, you know.
We need this Judge Gopple.
Yeah.
Oh hell.
Andy, I appreciate it, man. I just had to have you on because of that. And you guys at Fitz do such a good job and all. Everybody needs to know where to find it.
This video or just Fitz in general?
Fitz in general.
So in that, if you want to see more on the story we're talking about specifically, definitely head on over to fitznews.com. It's that simple. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so on the Tweeter-Weeter, well, X, formerly Tweeter-Weeter, all right, Instagram, Facebook, all the socials under the same handle, Real Andy Fancher. No relation to the real Donald Trump handle.
You're not the fake Andy Fancher.
Connect me. No. Yeah. No, that one was unavailable, so I had to lie and say I'm the real Andy Fancher.
You real enough.
I'm here. In the quarters of the Kershaw County Liberty Report studios. But as well as that, y'all can email me at andy@fitznews.com. Sincerely. Would love to hear from y'all.
If you got tips, any kind of craziness that you see government doing or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Andy's always there to.
Or if you see an absurd case where perhaps we're convicting the wrong people and you have pretty credible evidence proving otherwise, reach out to me too.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are doing a good job. I love to see that you're growing leaps and bounds and I just thoroughly enjoyed that damn last story, and I just had to.
I'm so glad that you watched it, that you were that taken back by it, that you wanted to have me on here to talk more about the stuff that wasn't necessarily in the report, because I mean there's a whole lot to break down in a very short amount of time. So I'm glad that we were even able to share that email between Sled and the solicitor, where the detective said, "How else can we make it fit?" To play that phone call, pretty much dismissing his golden egg theory that there was a dog collar that doesn't exist anymore that killed this boy. Because if this is true, that the serial killer is responsible, then that means they have been publicly persecuting. They have been
stoned. Metaphorically stoned.
For not only the murder, but the rape of your child. Could you possibly imagine?
Just think of the mental torture that they've been through. because of the incompetence of law enforcement. That's the story. That's the story right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings tears to my eyes just to think about something like that. You can't put yourself in those shoes.
Right.
You just can't. Andy, thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, man.
That was a very interesting case. Andy Fancher did a great job for Fitz News on this. That story is still left to be told. Was it that serial killer? Seems like it could have been. Was this officer trying to make his last hoorah at the end of his career? Who was this judge that signed off on it? All these questions should be answered. As we look at the judicial system, and not just in South Carolina, but across the nation, who do they actually work for? And what kind of law is this? Administrative law versus common law? Those are good questions. But in the end, it's all the plantation and the corporation, and the people are the commodity, the labor of the people. These are the things that we need to discuss, to need to realize that the government is not of, by, and for the people. It's for the corporation. That's it for the Liberty Report. Thank you all for tuning in. Leave your comments below. You can follow us on Rumble and Real Liberty Media. Real Liberty Media is a place that we can talk uncensored, and feel free to share with other people. RLM.com, RealLibertyMedia.com, and stay tuned to next week's Kershaw County Liberty Report. Until then, peace.
The government claims a right, and then their claim is that they derive these rights from the people.
Right.
Well, how can people give a group rights that they don't themselves have?
To steal from each other.
Right. If we can't tax people, like I can't tax you, where exactly does government derive this right from? You realize that the goal ought to be as voluntary a society as possible. Now, how exactly you achieve that, how far you can push that is debatable, but certainly that should be the goal. That if government is providing a service for you, well then why does it need to be provided by force?